Let's now turn to Eric Holtz-Jimenez, who's the Executive Director of Food First and the Institute for Food and Development Policy. He's the editor of Food Movements Unite, Strategies for to Transform Our Food Systems, and the author of Food Rebellions, Crisis and the Hunger for Justice. He has worked with farmers and participated in their farmer-to-farmer training, created innovative farming methods, raised yields, and improved livelihoods for hundreds of thousands of small farmers and their families. Welcome to Background Briefing, Eric Holtz-Jimenez.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
And we were just talking about the drought here in the United States, the worst since 1956. It's caused the price of corn to go up by over 50% in the last 4 weeks. There is, of course, a global dimension here with the Ukraine, Russia, and Australia facing similar droughts. How is this going to impact the rest of the world? There are some countries, for example, like Yemen, that are in a very unstable food situation at the moment, facing famine. A country like Egypt that's just have a revolution that is by no means settled. They're the world's largest importer of wheat. So do you think there's going to be ripple effects here beyond the fact that here in the United States we're going to have to pay 5% more for our food?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that there are going to be a number of very perverse effects because of the way our global food system works. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be enough food for everybody, but it does mean that prices are going to skyrocket, and those who will be affected most will be the poor. And it also means, for example, that countries that are land poor or water poor are going to continue to engage in land grabs around the world in order to try and avoid the global market, because that's where this is going to impact the most, is the global market. And, you know, we're going to see some of the same disturbing trends that we've seen in 2008 and 2011. I think that, the problem here is not the drought. I mean, I'm not a climate change denier at all. But the fact is that we've always had droughts different times. The problem is that the world food system is controlled by monopolies, and most of the grain from those monopolies comes out of the countries you just mentioned, the United States and Australia and whatnot. And so the global north is producing all this grain. And as long as when the global north's grain itself is under tension from drought, and then the rest of the world has to suffer. You know, back in the 70s, the rest of the world produced their own food. In fact, the third world used to produce a surplus of about $1 billion of food each year. That's since been reversed, and now they are net importers of food and very much dependent upon the food coming out of the United States and other parts of the North. So, yeah, I mean, the other thing that's going to happen, of course, is that the fuel prices are going to go up because now, you know, 40% of our corn crop in this country goes to fuel. And so what was, you know, people thought that ethanol was such a great idea, but they didn't count on droughts, did they? So now fuel prices are going to go up because of the fact that we cut it with ethanol.
So do you think then that, I mean, what you're saying here, to paraphrase, is that neoliberal programs like NAFTA have changed the nature of how many countries in the world, and particularly in the third world, were food self-sufficient. And now they've basically been hooked on American agribusiness. And if American agribusiness has a bad year, they starve.
Well, precisely. And they starve not because there's not enough food, again. They starve because the price of food goes up, and then they can't afford to buy it. I mean, what we're talking about is the corporate food regime, and it's an extremely vulnerable regime, and it's highly vulnerable to both environmental and economic shock. And the two interact, of course. And this has to do with the tremendous monopoly concentration that we have and the tremendous concentration that we have with crops and varieties. You know, most 90% of the cropland of industrial agriculture is dedicated to just five different crops. And there's just a handful of varieties within those crops. So that means that we're extremely vulnerable to environmental shock. And also, this allows the tremendous market power on the part of the monopolies that control the seeds that control the grain, you know, Monsanto, Syngenta, Cargill, ADM, et cetera. And of course, on the retail side as well. So anyway, what will happen, of course, is that prices will go up and these monopolies will make record profits again, as they did in 2011 and as they did in 2008 when we had the food crises. And so it'll concentrate even more wealth and power within those monopolies. So I think that the problem isn't, though of course climate change is a problem, droughts are a problem, we would be much more resilient as a global food system if our system was much more diversified and countries were allowed to grow their own food. You're precisely right. The free trade agreements are a part of the corporate food regime. Those agreements have destroyed farmers' economies around the world and made those countries dependent on our farmers, and now our farmers aren't going to be able to deliver.
But you've also said, Eric Holt-Jimenez, that what we grow is a distortion. There are only a few crops, and my understanding is that much of the corn, as you mentioned, goes to ethanol, but a lot goes to cattle feed, pork, and poultry. And then you have this ubiquitous product called high fructose corn syrup that's in just about every food that you buy in the supermarket. And that's one of the direct causes of obesity in this country.
And around the world.
And so you can make the case, can't you, that corporate food is killing us?
Yeah, well, I think that we have an especially lethal combination now, which is, it's not just the food itself, it's the whole food regime, because we have to look at the entire value chain. But that in combination with the climate changes, which this regime has provoked, is lethal. And until we begin to support the alternatives, which would be to diversify our food system and to move away from these patented seeds and begin to support local land races and move away from a seed-oriented approach to adaptation or climate mitigation and move towards an agroecological approach, which actually builds resiliency into the entire farm system, not just into one seed. It's much quicker and much easier for most of the world to adopt. Until we move towards these types of things, I think that we're going to continue to see these crises. And I think that with each crisis, these monopolies become more powerful and simply tighten their stranglehold on the world's food and fuel supply.
But you can't really bring back the family farm as much as it sounds like the solution.
Well, I don't know why not. I mean, in fact, that's the only sector which is growing around the world today, including the United States. The fastest growing sector in the United States are small farms. Now, these are very small farms, and most of them can't provide for an entire complete livelihood for the family. We need to address the land question in this country. We need to address the question of concentration. I mean, as we speak, land is concentrating in the Midwest, and it's going to concentrate a lot more after this drought, and a lot of farmers go bankrupt. And unless we reverse that concentration, I think that, you know, we really have some major disasters ahead. And, you know, while we've been able to shove most of these disasters off on the rest of the world, the chickens are coming home to roost, and we're going to be experiencing them here as well.
Well, I mean, I guess what we're getting to now is, how do you reverse corporate power in this country and corporate control? Because, I mean, you know, I'd love to see more family farms, but if the monopolies control it, how do you break the monopolies? How do you break corporate power? That's a long conversation, right?
Right. There's not just one answer to that, of course. One thing could be, we might consider applying our antitrust laws in this country. That would be
what a concept.
One step. Yeah,
applying the law.
Applying the law that actually exists.
Right.
And then, of course, we could bring back some laws to break up these trusts.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, we need strong movements. And you mentioned our last book, Food Movements Unite. In fact, that's what we need. We need the different social movements, and particularly the food movements and other movements, to create the political pressure and the political will for the structural changes that we need in this country. We need agriculture out of the WTO.
Right.
We need to scrap this farm bill. Farm bill in history is going through Congress now.
Sure. I'm sorry to tell you, but we've run out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Eric Holt-Jimenez, the Executive Director of Food First and the Institute for Food and Development Policy. And we are, just before I leave here today, I'll be back on Sunday, of course, I want to again invite you to the UCLA HEMA Forum that I'm hosting this Tuesday, July the 24th at 7:30 p.m. on drones and robotic warfare. Well, I'll have three of the leading experts on the civilian uses of drone, the advancement of robotic technology, and the ethical issues and implications. Again, this coming Tuesday, 24th of July, 7:30 p.m. at the UCLA HEMA Forum in Westwood, free to the public. Join me there. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.